This is Midweek with Eric Smith.
Welcome back to another edition of the show, folks. Thanks for tuning in yet again. Thursday night here on Midweek with Eric Smith, and my guest tonight is going to be Mark McAllister. He'll join the mix shortly, and we'll bring him in. And I'm thrilled to have him on, actually, tonight, because, it allows me to not only bring in different folks from the sports world, but also from the news world. But, of course, we remember Mark from back in the day at Sportsnet as well. This is a guy that's done a lot in the industry and kind of showing his versatility, no doubt, from transitioning from the sports world to the news world, where he has been for, damn near 20 years now, but at least 15 years now. So once Mark comes in, we will get going and kind of look back at his 25 plus years in broadcasting, which started at YTV, and we'll probably start with him right there when he comes in. And somebody just mentioned the shirt. These are the shirts that Christine Simpson and all the fine folks at Rogers put together, and we raised over $1 million by selling these t-shirts. So thanks to all of you who helped support the cause. Many of you, I'm sure, that purchased the shirt. So thank you for all of your support, and also for anything, no matter what it may be, that all of you have been doing to kind of play your part as we all together try and get through this pandemic. And whether it's, you know, volunteering, whether it's donations, whether it's just trying to be a better person, whatever it may be, thank you for everything that you've been doing, as I know we've all been chipping in to do a little bit more. I see Mark has entered in here, so I'm going to invite him in. What's going on, man?
There we go. How you doing, man?
How you doing? I'm doing great. What about you?
I'm good. Hanging in there along with everybody else, more or less.
Yeah.
Keeping busy, working hard.
Well, yeah, you've been definitely busier than a lot of folks, you know, trying to track down everything that's happening at City Hall and dealing with Mayor Tory. It's not quite as busy for us in the sports world. But, you know, I've said this the last few nights, Mark, I feel like things, and it's different for you because, again, you have a lot of stuff to discuss in terms of current day news. A lot of the guests that I bring on, though, we don't talk about sports a whole lot because of the fact there are no sports to talk about. So I just kind of, boom, dive right in to their careers, their life, and we just start, you know, telling some stories. But I want to take a few minutes here with you off the top just to kind of get your sense of how things are going, not only in the city of Toronto, but in the province, and just, you know, how difficult your job has been over the last 10 weeks trying to navigate through completing your tasks, staying as professional as you can be, providing the news every night that you can, while also being mindful of social distancing and all of the safety precautions that you have to be aware of when being out in the public and being out at City Hall or wherever it may be.
Yeah, it's interesting. My days throughout this entire thing, we're talking 2.5 months now, have been at City Hall, listening to Mayor John Tory, Dr. Davila, the medical officer of health, on a daily basis, and trying to get a sense of how they handle it all. And we listen to Justin Trudeau and Doug Ford on a daily basis. And then, so we're hearing it from all levels of government and how exactly they're going to do it. So I've spent my days just trying to analyze, figure out where they're coming from, take the information that they're providing everyone, make sure that we relay that and help people understand what it is that's going on, how they're analyzing everything from a medical point of view, but two, how it's going to affect our daily lives, because everything that's being done by government affects us directly. And that includes everything that's been closed. And now we're talking about reopening the economy. And that's the difficult part right now. The latest has been, you know, how do we do this? And there seems to be a little bit of political infighting over the last couple of days over what's going to happen next. And meanwhile, we're all waiting anxiously to get back to normal as much as that's possible, right?
Yeah. I was saying this to a friend of mine over the course of the weekend, and his wife is a doctor, a family doctor. And I don't know if it's completely fair to make this comparison, but I'm gonna try to here. Have you found it hard, you know, with a wife and with children, trying to navigate through how you personally feel? And I don't know if that's in line with how you professionally feel, versus the information you're getting and just trying to navigate through and sift through what to believe, what not to believe, how much is fact, how much is a fiction, how much do I need to worry about X versus maybe some folks are worrying about Y and I kind of get a sense that it's not that bad. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like just all the information that you're privy to and just trying to then make personal decisions for your family based on what you're learning within your professional life, that's so much closer than the rest of the public.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously I'm inundated with all the information that's available to everyone. And whereas, you know, the average person might be picking and choosing or not listening to it on a daily basis and maybe tuning it out as much as possible. So it does affect me directly in terms of my decision making. And it's what's interesting, too, is I still have to go to work. So everything I'm hearing plays into my time outside, making my way to and from work. As it happens, I live downtown Toronto, so I actually get on the subway. And that's something people don't want to do right now. But yeah, I do make my way directly from where I live to City Hall. And so I'm experiencing it as much as everyone else, while my wife is at home working hard from home and trying to take care of my two kids at the same time and make sure that they're being schooled as best possible. Same story that everyone hears about and is dealing with, and I'm sure you've talked about it as well. It's a different way of life.
It is definitely a different way of life, no doubt about it.
Imagine for you as well. I mean, you've spent your entire career on the road, my friend.
Yeah.
So you're not even around at night either for half the season. So it's got to be an interesting take for you too.
Well, I'll tell you, you're right. I mean, I've been traveling now for 15 years. So my family is definitely not used to having me home this much, which is both good and bad. So there have been some pros and cons. We won't deny that. And I know my wife watches from time to time, so she might even have heard me say that. And I think she would probably be nodding her head right now. Yeah, there are pros and cons to this. But for over 20 years, I've also essentially worked evenings and weekends. So even just being home for dinner times and for bedtimes and just kind of hanging out at night, again, pros and cons to that. I'll tell you the biggest adjustment, and I'm sure this goes for everybody right now, is – on one hand, you're probably saving some money because you're not going out because you can't go out, you know, whether it be restaurants or bars, or you can't be going to a lot of stores and buying things. But at the same time, grocery bills are going up way more because you're at home, you're eating three meals a day, you're snacking more, whatever. So that's been even just an adjustment in terms of meal prep and coming up with different ideas and not be bored by what you're eating, let alone the amount of food you're eating. It's all these little things that you don't think about maybe that factor in that suddenly now it's like, the world in many senses has stopped, but most of the bills haven't stopped for a lot of people, whether they're employed or unemployed or they've been furloughed, whatever it may be. You know, everything else is kind of still moving except for, oh yeah, the economy. And that's kind of, I think, the greatest challenge for so many people.
Yeah, an interesting story for me is I've spent my entire career, because we're out and about gathering stories on a daily basis, I'm renowned for eating out.
Right.
Really badly during the course of the day, grabbing lunch on the fly. This has forced me to actually make my lunch for the first time in God knows how long and put the groceries together and make sure I get it done.
All right. So I don't know if there's going to be an easier or good transition here. So I'm just going to make a clean break. We'll get back to some current day stuff as we sort of make the progression through your career. But Mark, what a difference right now, what you're doing and what you're covering and what the world's experiencing versus where it all started back at the first gig at YTV. So I'm going to skip over high school. And I mean, you can give me a sense of college, university if you want, but how did it all kind of start for you and that first opportunity in the industry?
Well, it was something that I actually wanted to do from high school. I got into to video and TV production, some radio production way back when, and followed it through my time in college. And like some people, kind of lucked into the first gig. I was putting the feelers out in the industry, finding out where there might be opportunities, came across the opportunity at YTV, which was a brand new station, a brand new place to work. You got to remember, and I'm dating myself here, there was only 30 channels in Canada when it all began. YTV channel 25, TSN channel 30. And so there was an opportunity there for me. I ended up landing a job hosting YTV News back then. And it's been a long time since.
Well, it's funny. There's a ton of people watching right now. I'm sure they're saying, what in the hell is YTV? but people our age, they remember YTV. And the cool thing was, too, is that it's YTV news that you were doing. And I say this respectfully. It's not like you were – and respectfully to the people that I'm kind of maybe throwing into the mix here. It's not like you're doing the you know, VJing type stuff and throwing to videos or doing, you know, quirky game shows for kids and whatever. It's a serious role within sort of a not as serious station that's gearing itself towards, again, folks, if you don't know, YTV, like youth television, trying to bring in the youth and with a little bit more of an adult focus in a more kid friendly presentation.
Yeah, we were there. The programming on YTV at the time was certainly geared towards a young audience, probably, you know, under 10 for the most part. They watched the PJs. When I was there, it was PJ Phil and so Paul McGuire and so all those guys. We were hosting a show that was geared towards a preteen audience, doing some educating and the like, but it was still a lot of fun. Everybody there had a lot of fun at the time, and you certainly learned a lot. It was kind of one of those free for all. Let's do what we can. Let's try and entertain those that are watching. And it's funny you bring it up, and that we're dating ourselves with all of this. Is throughout my career, different demo for each of the steps along the way. And so I still, to this day, will have people in their mid to late 30s say, "I remember." I remember you did something on YTV back in the day. And then, of course, the other steps, Sportsnet included, so you get different people watching at different times.
Yeah. How did you land that first gig? I mean, you talk about the audition process, but to be young and coming straight out of school and to be landing an on-air gig at any channel, yeah, that's huge in itself. So I mean, how did it come about for you?
It was, well, again, when you're in school, you're looking for opportunities. And
yeah,
as it happened, there was an award show in Toronto, and we as students were invited to go and attend and maybe volunteer and help out. I was schmoozing the entire time, trying to meet the people in the industry, met a couple of people that were involved at the channel at the time, and got invited in to have a look around, kept asking questions. And as it turned out, there was an opportunity right there as they were starting to recast the show, so to speak, and I landed it.
All right, so I know that you mentioned Sportsnet already, but there was, correct me if I'm wrong, there was another stop in between going to, you know, YTV to Sportsnet, and that was at OLN, Outdoor Life Network. How long were you then at YTV, and what was the opportunity that ultimately brought you away from that and to Outdoor Life Network?
OLN was a year after 3 years at YTV. It was actually a nice transition because the programming that I was involved in was extreme sports. So I was out doing mountain biking and snowboarding for a couple of those seasons, and it was geared towards more or less the same audience. The stuff that people were into, you know, at YTV were interested in sports of that nature. And that offered the bridge for me to eventually get into sports as well. So that was a lot of fun. I was involved in things that I had never really considered being involved in before. But you know, doing play-by-play for mountain bike racing and snowboard coverage was a lot of fun for sure.
Now that's kind of in its infancy as well. When we start thinking about some of the, you know, ancillary sports, X Games, and sort of those secondary sports that become so mainstream now. How was that for you, as you say, doing play-by-play, young guy doing play-by-play, learning a relatively new sport? I don't know if you had any history in any of that stuff, but to kind of learn that and evolve into that role.
Yeah, doing play-by-play, it was very new to me. And because I didn't really know the sports that well, you lean on the color guy that much more to educate you, whether it be before the events or even during, and as you're getting to know some of the different athletes that are involved. But it was a good training ground, a good opportunity to try and figure things out from that perspective and to be able to cover sports differently. It's not pro sports, but it eventually became that way, to your point. Great way to learn how to interact with athletes and to get to know the way things work in that industry before making the next step.
You know, I was talking a couple of nights ago, and I'm trying to remember honestly now who it was. Might have been David Amber a couple of nights ago when we were just chatting about the way that the industry has changed so much, and whether it be on the sports or news side, Mark, and you know, disagree if you will. But I said to him that I feel like as much as there are opportunities today for young broadcasters, it has become more difficult because though we sit here and we joke about that there's 500 channels, I'm not sure if there's as many jobs per se or as many opportunities when some of these startups were happening, when some of these channels were first coming into existence, and there were more opportunities, it seemed, for younger people. Whereas now these stations have been established for 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, and it's harder to kind of crack through. And I think the crack through now is happening more in digital media, whether it be through social channels, Twitter, Instagram, blogs, podcasts, whatever. And that's maybe where younger folks are finding an avenue as the industry is kind of trying to adjust itself to the online component, the in-hand component that much more as we kind of move forward now into the next wave.
It's true. Well, for I don't know how many years now, we've seen the onset of online media, social media. I think it started with blogs and some of the websites that were established in covering sports and news, and people trying to break in that way, make their name as a journalist covering the different sports. People are doing it on social media, yeah, but I mean, consider where some of these websites started, even in sports, and they've turned into or become built themselves up into a mainstream place to go and get your information.
Right.
It's not what we consider to be, you know, the mainstream stations or places to go. You're going to, you know, if you're interested in a sport, you're going to go to the Bleacher Report as much as you are ESPN to get some of that information, right? So people are making their names that way if there's an opportunity to hit the big time, so to speak, although I wouldn't consider it that anymore necessarily. But they're looking for their own avenues before they get that opportunity, if in fact they want that.
Well, and I know I sound like the old man, like get off my lawn when I hear a young kid or somebody younger saying, I'm a social influencer or I'm a YouTuber.
Influencer
And
is,
like
yeah, that's
that, yeah,
perfect.
it's
We're
like
adults
that's
again.
a job now. It's like, all right, hey, more power to you if you can get it. Like my kid isn't quite at that point yet, but when I hear I want to be a YouTuber, I'm going to be a YouTuber, I'm like, really? Oh, well, my initial reaction is, huh? But that's the wave. That's the and listen, if you can if you can be what's his name, Ninja or something, and playing video games and making $3-4 million a year, hell, why not? It's getting to the point now where parents we might be saying, yeah, sure, go ahead and play video games a little bit longer. This might actually end up being your career. You might make millions off
Yeah,
this.
well, it's a live audition tape, right? You're creating
Yeah.
yourself, putting it out there, and if by chance people catch on, they want to watch you, you've got your own channel, your own outlet, and then there's opportunity perhaps to catch on somewhere else. And we've certainly seen that with YouTube stars as well. Our own Lily Singh from Toronto lands a gig, late night TV show with NBC after becoming super successful. So you never know.
And
Give credit
the
to the people
scare.
that have been successful in that because they figured out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And the scary thing, and listen, I know I'm not, breaking any news here by saying this, but the scary thing, especially for you and I as parents and anybody else that's watching with the kids, is that it's so difficult now to try to navigate through what you want to allow your children to have in terms of apps and have access to and what you want to put out there. Because even from a young age, it's getting to the point now where, TikTok is, listen, there are grown adults doing it. I have an account still, I've yet to post a video.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
But I don't know if I'll be dancing.
That's all
But
you can do on TikTok.
I
Is
guess.
that what you're supposed to?
But
I
you know what
mean,
I'm saying? You've got like seven, eight, 10-year-olds.
get your pets to talk. I think that's
I'll do that. That's easy enough. But you know what I'm saying? You've got like seven, eight, 10-year-olds that have TikTok accounts and I would hope at that age that the innocence of youth that there's nothing too inflammatory that happens, but there could be some stuff that gets put out at a young age that's going to haunt you or stick with you when you're 16, let alone you're 20, let alone you're 30, and this and everything that's out there. I mean, you could be 13 years old and love building Legos and drop a curse word or something, and it's now lives forever in the YouTube universe. And does that come back to bite you years later when you're trying to get a job or something because you cursed or you swore or you said something or you did something? It's so hard with the access that we all have, even in a show like this. I try to, try to maintain my professionalism, my maturity, but it's a little bit more of a loose atmosphere and it's not as traditional. I've sworn a couple of times I wouldn't be doing that if I was on Sportsnet on live television, but it's just
we know you've got a drink on standby below the camera.
Yeah, exactly. But it's the instantaneous to everything, right? And the cameras are always out. They're always rolling. Yep. And that's both good and bad.
Well, it's interesting that you make that point because we're kind of showing our age a little bit in saying that. Something I've always been conscious of is making sure that knowing what we do will live on forever.
Yeah.
Is something that you because you see the issues that have popped up as a result of people not really taking that into consideration, not really caring about privacy concerns, not really understanding that there is a consequence perhaps down the road. And that comes with age, with, I guess, a little bit of wisdom and knowing that that's a possibility and it could end up. But again, with that, there's opportunity too. So you have to be able to balance the two.
All right. Sorry, folks, for veering a little off the path there for a second. Put my little soapbox away or whatever.
Wisdom with Eric and Mark, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So Outdoor Life Network, doing play-by-play for sort of the new sort of sports that were at least on the fringe then, but it becomes certainly popular, more mainstream Olympic sports now, as we talk about so many of these different things. But that helps you springboard into a sports job, period, at Sportsnet. Tell us how that comes together. And all of the sort of minutia there.
Yeah, it's actually turned out to be a fairly easy transition in terms of how it came about. At the time, Sportsnet was just launching, and it was owned by CTV, as was the Outdoor Life Network. And so when the giga was up at the Outdoor Life Network, as it happens, they needed people to be able to do things at Sportsnet. And so while they were hiring some of the more established sports anchors from across the country, they also, CTV, were launching their news channel at the same time. So they needed sports content for their news channel. They needed some of the people to be able to provide that. So in the old Sportsnet studios, back up in the top corner, there was a camera mounted where we would do the sports hits for the CTV news channel at the time. That was the foray into that part of things. So it was basically time in the sports studios and a little bit of time filling in on the desk every now and then before full-time reporting, which was most of my time there.
Now, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm pretty certain that you're going to know the dates, or at least within a couple of months. What year was this that you started? Because, man, that's where I obviously met you, down at the Raptor games and covering the Raptors.
Yeah.
But I don't recall the specific year or obviously years that you were there.
98, I think, was the launch.
Yeah.
Again, we're dating ourselves, but it was 98 or 99. And again, it was a little bit of time before getting out into the field and trying to get to the point where I was reporting on a regular basis. But the first little bit was basically just doing highlights. And then getting out into the fields, that's where the magic happened. And we had a lot of fun covering almost every sport there was. So it was kind of like a general assignment Toronto sports reporter. So covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, you name it.
And that must have been a thrill for you, Mark, because without any knock to the previous gigs, it's, you're doing it from a young age. It's fabulous. You got the YTV gig, the Outdoor Life Network. But suddenly now you're working in Toronto in the biggest market in the country. And as you just said, you're covering all of the major teams. For a young sports fan from Ontario, from the greater Toronto area, this has to be an unbelievable opportunity, let alone thrill for you to be thrust into this at a brand new sports network.
Yeah, and as a sports fan, on top of everything else, it's not just a job. Obviously, you have the opportunity to get out there and enjoy what you're doing. And you're watching the games up close and personal. You're reporting and you're maintaining your professionalism. You're not cheering in the press box, but getting a chance to be there and watch this up close and personal. And let's remember, at the time, the Leafs were a playoff team and doing okay. So
yeah,
it was a lot of fun to be able to cover them. And the Raptors were still a brand new team. And what was funny, if we rewind back to YTV, this was interesting. Even before my career started, I was a basketball fan through and through. Followed well, we've just watched The Last Dance, you know, spent the 90s watching the Bulls and company. But when the Raptors launched, and I was at YTV, and as it happens, and people won't remember this, the draft that year was covered by YTV. None of the major networks wanted to pick it up. So we were covering the draft of Damon Stoudemire and Big Country Reeves. And I was actually out in Vancouver when all that happened. So it was a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. And the only reason I didn't know that, and I appreciate you bringing that up, is because I was in the stands as a fan. And I was one of those ones cheering and yelling for Ed O'Bannon and booing mercilessly the selection of Damon Stoudemire, which clearly proves what I know in terms of how that worked out for the Raptors. But, you know, as a basketball fan as well, just to be so thrilled that the city of Toronto, that a team in my backyard finally had its own team. And of course, I was going to be at the draft. And then to be just a couple of short years later, you know, working in the industry and covering that team, it was, you know, unbelievable. I just found a couple of weeks ago, cleaning up the basement in the midst of all this, you know, pandemic and whatever, tidying up. And I found the first ever article that I wrote in the Humber College student newspaper when I started. And it was I was in school maybe 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks. And it was an article on the Toronto Raptors looking to open up training camp, their first ever training camp at Humber College. And they were looking at potentially spending $3 to $4 million to expand the athletic wing at Humber before ultimately that kind of fell through because they were just awaiting another, you know, few years ish until they either had their own practice facility. Ultimately they did at Air Canada Center. Yep. And they ended up playing, I believe practicing at the Bathurst Jewish Community Center or something in Toronto. And that was kind of like their main hub for a couple of years there. So it's weird to see things like that.
You knew it from the very beginning.
Yeah, quotes from Glenn Grunwald in it, you know, as assistant general manager at the time and all this. It's funny. And as I said, that's where I meet you then a couple of years later into the Raptors run, as I'm a little bit younger in the industry than you, and suddenly you're established and the Sportsnet gig, as you say, general assignment guy doing some news stuff, but then also an opportunity with a young Raptors team to get onto the broadcast and do the sideline reporter's role with Sportsnet. So another big opportunity for you young in your career.
And it started with, obviously, as you well know, and you have told the story a million times, but when Vince arrived, everybody was interested.
Yeah.
And so there was that much more interest to put a beat reporter with the Raptors and cover the team that much more, because I don't think we actually had someone covering the team day in, day out up until that point. And so that opportunity arose, and obviously I jumped at it because it was so much fun at the time to be able to watch this team come to fruition and watch what Vince was doing on the floor every single night. It was special.
What stands out for you more than anything about that role, that gig specifically, and covering that team? You got to have a couple stories, I'm sure.
Sure. Yeah. At the time, it was the excitement and trying to generate the excitement. It wasn't trying to. People were already getting excited. But to be able to fuel that as much as being there and reporting on it and people watching the games, you were able to kind of provide that inside scoop, provide the daily stories as sports reporting does. But to be able to be there, capture it, and try and tell people what these guys are like off the court, what they're doing to prepare for the games, all the stuff that you see. And, you know, speaking with the wisdom of Lenny Wilkins day in, day out and hearing that. But seeing young players, and Vince was at the time somewhat naive, had a bit of a chip on his shoulder, a bit of that attitude that rookies sometimes have, and, you know, first, second year player. And as his profile started to build, you started to see the ego creep in, but you knew he was a good guy through and through. But the day in, day out stuff and trying to get clips from him and in the dressing room and outside of the practice facility upstairs, you know, talking to those guys. And again, you do this now, you've done it for a very long time. It's always fun and interesting to see what they're going to give you on a daily basis. That's something beyond the sports cliche.
You know, it's interesting.
Learn,
and I know
they learn early how to give you that, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's, I think they take courses in it. They do media training.
Exactly.
And I've got to imagine part of the media training exactly. is here's some good cliches and nice little deflections you can throw out there. So
and as a reporter, your job is to try and break through that and get them to think beyond the sports cliches. And
that's become tougher and tougher. And I'm sure this applies to you within the news realm that you're in now too. It's become tougher and tougher because, and I don't say this negatively, it's just, it's a product of the way of the world now. Is so much of what we get is now podium. It used to kind of be you would have opportunities to break away for one-on-ones and private conversations, or even a scrum, the traditional kind of, you know, folks that the pool around with everybody's arm out. You can still kind of make that a little bit more casual, a little bit more disarming, because there's not this rigid, literal platform podium in front. But now in sports and news, whatever, more often than not, podium, microphone set up in a pool feed in the back, you know, reporters back 10, 15 feet asking questions, not just because of COVID-19, but just in general.
Yeah.
Reporters back, and it takes away that sort of informal and personal touch that you can often get or you want to get to try and get some of that information that might not be just the same standard that everybody's getting.
Well, and you can establish the relationships with those guys
at
the same time, right? When we used to get into the dressing room and talk to these guys one-on-one, as you probably still do, but for anybody that, you know, is a beat reporter, you want to establish those relationships, get to know them. They're more apt to open up to you and provide you some of the information that you can relay to the fans that they might not otherwise know. So yeah, that was key, and continues to be key if you can get in there and do it. You know, one story that has always stood out to me and I like to tell. So I'll give you one story. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but it was during the Raptors playoff run in 2000. I don't know if it was, I think it was 2001, first round series against the Knicks.
Yep.
And they lost one of the games, maybe game three. And I remember reporting on something that Oakley had done in the game. Wasn't up to standard, and so I had reported on it. And that's when I realized these guys watch what we do.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so here's the story. Next day in the practice facility, everybody's, you know, waiting on the sideline for the players to come over and scrum with us. And during the playoffs, obviously the scrums are that much bigger. Oak stops 20 feet short of the scrum. So there's at least 15 cameras, numerous reporters, stops short of the scrum, scans across everybody, points at me directly and says, "You." Like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
"You. I heard what you said about me last night. I don't want to talk to you." So everybody's looking at me like, what the hell did you do? What did you say?
Yeah.
He's not going to talk to us if you don't get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
So, That's a moment that stood out for me. It was pretty funny. And me following him back to the elevator out in the concourse and trying to ask him what the problem was and trying to make amends. But that was a fun moment for sure.
Well, these guys, when they say they don't watch, some don't, but somebody they know is watching, and they certainly get passed down. So
yeah,
I'll tell you a quick one. I know I'm here to interview you, but just on a similar vein to some extent, dealing with that team from that era as well. It was a couple of years later, so it was after Oak was gone, but Antonio Davis still in town, and I always got along with Antonio, still do to this day. But I had said on the radio at some point, you know, and that's when I was doing the rap, the post-game show, for like a decade, and most of that time, the team was awful. So try going on the air for anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes after every single game in 25, 30-win seasons, trying to talk to fans and talk them off the ledge and try to say, oh, it's really not that bad.
Right.
And one night, somebody had called up and was talking about trades. And to this day, I despise talking trades, fantasy trades. If there's an actual legit rumor out there or information or sources that are telling me something and we can actually have a conversation on something that is truthful, no problem. But somebody calling up and saying, what do you think if we deal this guy for this guy and we could put together this package for that package? It bores me. I hate it.
Yeah.
Somebody called in. And the way I got away from the trade discussion was simply, let's be real about this. This team is not good right now. There are only two players of any kind of value on this team that you would want to deal or that you could deal that would actually fetch something back in return. Vince Carter and Antonio Davis. And I feel pretty damn confident in saying you're not trading Vince Carter. Oh, yeah, by the way, a couple years later they did. Yeah. But I felt pretty confident at the time saying you're not dealing Vince Carter. So I said, so the one player you could maybe trade that would actually get you something of value in return is Antonio Davis. Now, to me, that's a compliment in the sense that you actually are good. You know, you carry value. If they're looking to make a trade, you actually
what did,
and
what we they have to say about it.
you'd be doing the guy a favor too, dealing from a bad team.
Yeah.
So the next day, I had no idea that there was any problem. You know, like say stuff on the air and in one ear out the other. I don't know. To me, it wasn't anything inflammatory. Jim Lombard, who was up until a couple of seasons ago, the longtime director of media relations for the Raptors, he comes up to me. And he says, I can talk to you for a second. Yeah, da da da. Antonio, he heard about what you said. I'm like, well, what did I say? And he said, well, anyway, Mr. Davis wants to talk to you. He said, oh, okay. Sure, no problem. I mean, yeah.
And if it's Mr. Davis and it's not Tone,
yeah,
you've got a problem. Yeah, yeah.
So, and I killed Jim to this day for this. Like, I mention it probably once a year when I see him. So I'm talking to like, Jim's here and we're chatting. And he says, Mr. Davis would like to talk. I'm like, sure, no problem. He's like, and I go to turn to like head to the locker room. And I literally go like, boom, like I walk into Antonio's chest. Basically, he's standing right behind me the entire time. Lombard didn't say a word. And I didn't say anything bad about Antonio, but he's literally standing 6'9" right behind me. And I boom, like face plant into his chest. And just kind of like say, hey, what's up, Antonio? He's like, I heard what you said. I'm like, oh, no. And it's just it became, this running joke with him and I over the years because we talked it out and everything was cool and water settled and everything else. But it was these guys, man, they like I say, when they say they don't read, I'm sure it's the same with politicians and whatnot. Yeah. They don't read. They don't watch. They do or somebody close to them is. And they certainly find out about stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And then you get message like as what you just said from Jim. You know, it, there's always a media person or somebody by their side in their entourage that knows and yep. will relay it to them. And it happens for me with politicians, too. They've got chiefs of staff, communications people that let them know who's reporting what. And so sometimes, there's messages sent either from those people or, you kind of get a sense at that next press conference or availability that something's up for sure.
Yeah, they need to teach you a lesson for at least one day, right?
Not quite on the level of Trump not taking your questions or pointing at you and calling you out, but it can get pretty bad.
Yeah, thank God you don't have to deal with that. No. I'm noticing a bit of a trend here with you, Mark, and it continues on even later into your career. But tell me if I'm wrong with this. YTV, Outdoor Life, Sportsnet, Toronto One, you love the startups. You love to be in the infancy of places and help places get going. Because how does that happen then from sports guy to then transitioning into where you kind of are now, into the news side of your career where it began at Toronto One?
Yeah, well, again, like you said, it was a startup and lots of conversations about opportunity to try something new to help establish another voice in Toronto media. Had a few people talk to me as it happens. One of them was a season ticket holder for the Raptors and approached me at a couple of the games. But, I have to be real too. The last season I was covering the Raptors and was doing the sideline reporting and traveling with the team as you have been doing for some time was also my first year of marriage. And really having to weigh things out, really having to decide, okay, do I want to continue to do this and spend the time on the roads, or do I find a new opportunity to go in a different direction? And that's ultimately the decision I had to make.
Yeah, 15 years. My wife married into it. My kid was born into it. So it's kind of all they've known.
Yeah, but, I'm not taking anything away from what you've chosen. It just happened to be a personal decision for me.
Yeah.
And hey, I've been a fan ever since, and I've had a chance to sit back on my couch and watch the games for the most part, or listen to you in my car if I'm driving from one place to another.
Hey, I'm the same way in the summertime when I get a chance to just sit back and be a baseball fan for a while and just watch and listen to games and not work them. So it's you kind of can enjoy that then those private moments where you can still be a fan of sports. Was it a tough decision for you, though? If this might not be fair of me to ask, because I'm sure it's an easy personal decision to some extent, or easier personal decision. But professionally speaking, to go from, as you acknowledged earlier, you were in a pretty good bubble there with the Leafs in the late 90s, early 2000s, with the Raptors, with Vince Carter finally coming on and a few straight years in the playoffs there. Sports world in Toronto, I mean, it quickly dropped really fast, but you're kind of in this great little pocket, and to kind of walk away from that and being on a broadcast of an NBA team, to walk away from that to try something new and to transition into news, how tough was that?
It was tough, especially, and let's be frank, Toronto 1 didn't last very long, right?
Right.
So there was a good chunk of time where, you know, I was questioning myself and where I'd gone with my career and making that decision and getting out. Thought about, you know, making the transition back into sports and trying to talk to people. I knew that when we knew that Toronto 1 wasn't going to last, I had to figure out my next steps. And thankfully, again, contacts in the business, other opportunities came up to stick with news and continue on in that realm. And that's when I had the opportunity to make my way to Global. And that's where I've spent the chunk of my career, 12 years at Global before, you know, taking off from there a couple of years ago.
So, as you said, 12 years at Global and the bulk of your career now in news, in spite of a start in, well, I guess the start wasn't in sports, but the most of the early years in sports.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself still a sports guy, or are you a news guy?
Sports at heart.
Yeah.
Very much a fan. There are many times where I'm watching and listening and think, man, how fantastic would it be? And obviously last year was huge, right? To be able to say, you know, to be there and to do what you're doing and to cover it from that perspective would be fantastic. I'm not going to regret the decision, though. I mean, covering news and being a journalist and being able to tell some of the stories that immediately affect people in their lives is much, much different than the escape that people get from sports.
Sure.
And that has been a huge defining factor for me in the decision I made to go in this direction and to continue on with news, was knowing that I was going to have that direct impact and be able to relay information that's important to people and what they're doing with their lives.
No, man, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I give you nothing but respect for doing what you've done, because I don't know that I could do it to transition the way you have, the way that you morphed midway through your career and now have established yourself for 15 plus years within the news world and the news realm. I'm not sure that I could do it. I've always said if I wasn't doing sports, I guess I'd, and I don't mean this in a negative way to anybody that does it, I'd want to do like entertainment or weather or something, because I just don't know that I could deal with the news every day. And that's not to say that weather is easy or entertainment is easy. I just don't know if I could deal with the world and all of the bad stuff and all of the stories and all of the angles within the news realm that happens on a daily basis. So for you to thrust yourself into that, but then to also appreciate the challenges that it brings and the reward that it brings to the audience by staying informed via what you're doing, I give you nothing but credit for that. I think it's incredible.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, there is a reward to it. It is very difficult at times, especially when it comes to certain stories and issues. It tugs at you, and so you are going to be affected by it personally. But at the same time, as a professional, you stick with it and you make sure that your job first and foremost is to communicate and let other people know what's up, and to be able to analyze too, to be able to offer that insight and give people, you know, you have to dig, you have to investigate, you have to try and figure out, read between the lines, so to speak. And to be able to try and do that is a challenge on a day-to-day basis, but it's one that's important. So I certainly appreciate doing. But, you know, let me give you this. As someone that works in the business and does what you do, you're an amazing communicator. And that's what it takes in this business, whether you're in sports, whether you're in news, entertainment, whether you're a weather person, to have that gift of being able to communicate and to tell stories. And I'll be frank. I mean, sports is an unbelievable avenue and ability to tell stories. That's where it comes from. And so I gained a lot of my ability to do that through my time in sports, to be able to approach, aside from gathering facts and information and being able to relay, that's one thing. It's another thing to be able to do it in a way where people are going to be captivated by it and to be able to tell the story. That's something I take pride in. And that's something that I have taken from my time in sports, to be able to, you know, offer some drama and to be able to capture the imagination and people's interest by telling the story that way.
Mark, there's no denying that some days are harder or easier than others, but I'm focusing maybe on the hard day.
Yeah.
It's one thing for a guy to get traded, a trade rumor to be out there, you know, a team loses a big game the night before, whatever. You talk to a player, you talk to a coach, you maybe get lucky enough to talk to a general manager, an agent. It's fairly easy to put together a story and to do it in a matter of, I don't know, a few hours a day at most, if you had to give yourself the day to kind of piece it together. I've got to assume it's much more difficult when, unfortunately, there's a shooting, somebody passes away, there's a car accident, there's something that happens where you're then needing to potentially approach families and or teachers or colleagues or friends, whatever it may be. How difficult is that to not only do that part of the job, but then also do it properly under a time constraint as you're trying to get it to air by 6 o'clock and maybe it's already 10 a.m. or it's 1 p.m. or whatever the hell time it is. How difficult is that portion of the job?
The deadlines are serious and extremely difficult. And to be able to gather the information as quickly as we need to, sometimes educate ourselves, make sure we understand the issue as best as possible. That's where the benefit of, you know, covering certain things on a regular basis comes in. And then try not to get emotionally involved in some of these stories too. It's, you know, you've got to be able to put that stuff on the back burner and concentrate on the craft and being able to take the time to gather. It reaches a point with experience that you know how to approach things, how to get that information as quickly as possible, how to gather that information. Your workflow is a big part of it. Being able to start your day knowing I've got to hit the ground running with this story, gather your information, reach out, try and get the production involved, hit the road, get the interviews, get to a scene, and then know, okay, I've got this deadline to hit. Got to turn the corner midway through the day. Got to start putting this stuff together. Got to start writing. Have to start preparing for going live somewhere. Same sort of thing. So it gets better with experience. I certainly tell that to people that are just starting out in the business. You have to know how to react quickly and get the information you need. But you have to know what you're talking about too. And thankfully, if you've been around long enough, you kind of get it.
I got to imagine the going live portion as well certainly helped with the sports experience you had from just being live in broadcast there. That had to have been, you know, one of the ultimate training grounds in terms of just ultimately then doing live stuff in news as well.
Yeah, as you know, I mean, if you know your stuff, you can talk about it.
Yeah.
And you can fill that time and you can provide the information that's needed. From a newscast perspective, you're limited. You've got a certain amount of time to tell your story, to go live and get it done quickly. But then there's opportunity, as you see through cable news networks and the like and talk shows, that's where you can dive into issues. And, you know, if you're comfortable with it, then you can roll with it and be able to give people the information they need.
You know, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I know you've told the story ad nauseum. But when we talk about being live back in 2011, when you had that on air scare, medical scare, and I'm sure just confused in the moment at the time, Maybe if you can just, rather than me trying to kind of relay things, if you could kind of, let folks know exactly what happened,
Sure.
And how things kind of unfolded and evolved from that moment in 2011 for you.
So, yeah, in the moment, I can tell you. So basically, I was dealing with a medical condition at the time, didn't know what it was.
Right.
Up until that point, I knew something was wrong. I was having problems with concentration and losing train of thought. And then there was times when, and this is the scary part when you're in our business, is having problems communicating and not coming across. So something was off, something was weird, knew I had to get to a doctor and figure it out. While waiting to do that, I'm live on the air every day doing my job in the studio. And then all of a sudden I'm reporting on something and I wasn't making any sense. It was 30 seconds approximately where I was just talking gibberish.
Right.
It didn't make any sense. It was clear to those who were watching that something was wrong. Well, for most people, there were other people that choose to, see it other ways and make fun of it. But what was funny is at the moment, I knew something's wrong. Something's wrong. I tried to finish what I was saying. I think the last couple words were sorry. Thank you. Ann Rusevsky was the anchor
yep.
global at the time. She very quickly tried to move on to the next story. And so I made my way back to my desk and had a producer run to me immediately and say, what's wrong? Are you okay? Wanted to call an ambulance. That's when I called my wife and said, something's wrong. Need you to come pick me up. Something's happening. So skip ahead. It took a month of doctor visits, dealing with the public reaction to having seen me do this and trying to figure out what's going on. Ended up being diagnosed with epilepsy. And as it turned out, it was a seizure. And most people, when they consider a seizure, they think dropping to the ground,
right.
convulsing, and that's what a seizure would be. But in this particular instance, it was just a matter of affecting my speech and my train of thought. And so when that happens, I was actually somewhat conscious of what was happening, but that's the way it affected me. And other people have different experiences altogether. And it took some time to really gain the confidence to get back into doing what I was doing. I was steadfast with the producers and the executives at Global that I wanted to continue to do my job. They were very and extremely supportive at the time and allowed me to do so. We came to an agreement that I wouldn't be live until I knew exactly what was happening and if I had the ability to do so. But it took some time to come to terms with that. Thankfully, I had the opportunity to stick with it and stay with the business. And over the course of, I think within a year, I figured out proper medications and have had it under control ever since. But I've never really, can never really say I can put it behind me, much like with any medical condition. I live with
yeah.
it, but at the same time, scary thought, especially when you have people like Howard Stern and Jimmy Kimmel actually bringing it up on their shows. and having fun with it. It was very surreal, very surreal.
Two questions, and we've got like 6-7 minutes left in the show here.
Sure.
And it's a hard out at 11 o'clock, as I've learned so many times on this show. Did you ever get an apology from any of those places when they found out the truth? I mean, does anybody ever follow up and say, hey, like, because, I mean, it's one thing if a reporter is just like deer in the headlights, get scared and you know, it's going to be a blooper, it's going to be rising. It's another thing if it's a medical condition that you were unaware of and there's a reason behind what happened. Did anybody follow up and say anything?
No. And to be honest, as I was dealing with it and trying to accept everything myself, I had kind of moved on from the initial embarrassment, anger, through all of that. I certainly read the comments online, both people that wanted to make fun of, but people that were, empathizing and
yeah.
calling for those people to make apologies. So I certainly appreciated it at the time. And then, but never heard it. And thankfully, a couple of years later, I was able to, with the support of Global at the time as well, help tell the story and let people know what it was that had happened. help open people's eyes, educate them a little bit, and tell the stories of a few other people that are involved in the epilepsy community.
I'm certainly not judging by asking this question, just more out of interest. Why did you take as long as you did to ultimately tell folks what happened?
Trying to come to terms with it myself. I wanted to move on.
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, it had been a couple of years. I was doing my job. I was still able to continue to do what I did. But over the course of that time, I was involved with other people that had epilepsy and was hearing their stories, the stigma that's attached to it, and thought, you know, I have this avenue, this ability to say something. And so I have to get over what it is that was trying to tell me I had to keep it to myself and share my story to help others perhaps. And thankfully I was able to do that.
So Mark, 12 years at Global, you then leave the industry, go to Metrolinx for a couple of years in a communications role.
Yeah.
And then ultimately come back into broadcasting to join City News as a senior reporter. So we now have 5 minutes left here.
Okay.
The decision to leave,
yeah,
to again try something new,
sure,
but then ultimately to come back. Walk me through that. How, why, and you know, the two separate decisions, leaving and then ultimately returning.
Yeah, the leaving part was, you know, 12 years at Global and in the news business, and you know, certainly had some great experiences and an amazing time being able to do what I did there. But it was also, you know, we started this conversation about when I got into the business. And so when you're talking 20 years, I had reached a point where I thought, you know what, it's never been about being on camera or being in the public eye for me. That's never been a part of it. But I had reached a point where I was kind of like, I'm good. I've had my opportunity to do what I wanted to do. I've gained a ton of experience that, you know, I can lend to another position or another industry. And we've certainly heard a lot of people that are in our side of the business making the flip into communications and PR and that sort of thing. So I thought,
yeah,
hey, I'm at this point in my life. If I'm going to make a career change, let's do it now and let's give it a shot. And was able to do that for a couple of years. And then, you know, had a couple of conversations and another opportunity presented itself, and really couldn't pass up the offer. You know what you know. And when the chance came to jump back in, or as we've heard many times, Godfather says, they pulled me back in.
And did you have the itch, though? Did you personally have the itch to get back to it?
It's always in you, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you're right. Yep.
You step away, and this is what I've been doing my entire career in my life. And you know it well. And, you know, watching the news for 2 years and knowing what's going on and knowing that there's a big story, or as I was saying earlier, after getting out of sports and watching, you know, some of the big sports stories going on and thinking, I know what I would do if I was there. I'd love to be there and be a part of it. And it was very similar from a news perspective, seeing all the big stories over a couple of years and thinking, you know, I'd love to be the one covering that right now and pass that on.
Well, you certainly picked a good time to come back. I mean, I know you're on the news side, but you come back in 2019, the Raptors go and win a championship. And then, well, we certainly wish that this wasn't happening right now, but it has provided quite the platform for you to be informing the public on a daily basis about the most serious news story the world has dealt with in 100+ years.
It's been pretty crazy, but again, the world works wonders, and you know, I'm blessed to be able to give them the opportunity to step in and to be able to cover this on the front line, so to speak. And I mean, certainly not like our medical workers on the front lines, but to be able to provide the information has been great. And to your point about last year and the Raptors winning everything, to be able to, while you were on the roads covering it all and watching them win it firsthand, to be able to go live from Jurassic Park that night and to be in the midst of the crowds outside and to go live for hours afterwards as everybody was partying on the streets was certainly a lot of fun as well. And I would have killed myself if I was still in the comms side of things and I wasn't out there on the streets being a part of it and being able to cover it at the same time.
7 seconds left. Perfect timing. That's a hell of a broadcast right there. Mark, thanks for this. Stay safe and healthy.
You too, man.